You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to this week's Pilgrim on the 405. We're going to spend a little time today talking about some of the barriers and challenges that businesses in Southern California, or businesses anywhere for that matter, experience in their attempt to grow. And I'm going to ask producer Paul Roberts to participate in the conversation. We'll have a nice conversation about, number one, what are the problems and challenges, and number two, what is it that the entrepreneurial operating system can do to help these businesses overcome those barriers and limitations? So, Paul, I want to tell you a little bit about what we do in EOS.
Yeah, please.
And then let's have a conversation about it. Now, the entrepreneurial operating system was put together a couple of years ago by a fellow named Gino Wickman in Detroit. And together with 175 other people around the world, what we EOS professional implementers do is we help people get what they want from their business. Now, I do that by providing a complete system with simple tools to help a business owner do three things. We call vision, traction, and healthy. Now, vision means first getting the leaders in the company on this 100% on the same page with where the organization is going and how it's going to get there. Traction, from the standpoint of helping the leaders to become more disciplined and accountable, executing really well to achieve every part of that business owner's vision. And then healthy, meaning helping the leaders to become a healthy, functional, cohesive leadership team. Because unfortunately, leaders often don't function well as a team, right? From there, as goes the leadership team, so goes the rest of the organization. And we get to the point where the entire organization is crystal clear on the vision, all much more disciplined and accountable in executing the vision, gaining consistent traction and advancing as a healthy, functional, cohesive team. Now, when we find a company that this resonates with, we schedule a 90-minute meeting to show them how to use EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, to experience vision, traction, and health with their team. So, Paul, you've seen lots of businesses sitting here in the studio.
I feel like I'm getting a PhD in business, sitting here day after day watching dozens of entrepreneurs and executives come through this studio and tell their story.
Well, what are the issues that you notice that limit them in their growth?
You know, it's an interesting question because there seems to be themes that run through these discussions. And in the beginning, you know, most of the guests come in and it's like going to a networking event. How's your business? Great. How's your business?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Couldn't be better. And it's only when we peel back the onion, as you guys say, or as we delve a little deeper, that they start to admit, you know, I'm not sure where this is all going. I've got some real problems here. A lot of it's people problems. I hear that all the time. People problems. Can't find the right people. Can't keep the right people. Can't motivate the right people. These darn millennials, you know, if you don't excite them in 2 minutes, they're out the door here. On and on and on. HR issues, on a lot of people issues there. I also hear, you know, clearly there's always some money issues. That doesn't seem to be the main one, though. It doesn't seem to be the money that's holding people back. I don't hear most people saying, gee, if only I had more money, I'd do this. I think a lot of it is a lack of what to do next. Most of these people are retroactive. They're reacting to stuff rather than... They say they're planning. They have meetings. They bring in corporate trainers. They try and have visions and values and where they're going. But when the rubber hits the road, I don't know that they're really turning those into action plans.
Well, what we've found is that 82% of the businesses out there have people problems.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to handle them. I've seen so many employees who are in spots where they really don't understand. In fact, there's a Harris poll put together that said, the majority of people don't understand where the company's going.
Yeah.
They have no idea what the values are of the company or what they're trying to do, and 50% of them don't even care.
Wow. Wow.
Now, if you're trying to grow, wouldn't you assume that it's necessary to have somebody in every seat in your organization who gets what you're doing, wants to be there, and is capable of doing it?
Well, sure. They all come and quote this book that is now one of those touchstones in business, Good to Great by Jim Collins. Got to get the right people on the bus. Got to get them in the right seat. Everybody mouths these platitudes, but at the same time, they're complaining about how difficult it is to put them into practice.
Well, and I mean, what I've discovered is that there's two reasons that business owners don't get the right people in the right seat. Either they don't want to because of the relationship that they have with the person, or they don't want to go through the agony of replacing them, or they don't know how. They don't know how to get the right person in the right seat. I've heard so many business owners say to me, you know, in order to get a good salesperson, I've got to hire four or five of them.
Yeah.
Four of them will wash out.
Right.
Well, what that's telling me is you're paying an enormous price to get that one salesperson.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't know how.
Can I give you another? This is my own personal grudge. And again, it's from 5 years of sitting in this chair day after day and listening to people all come in and talk about culture. Now, I don't discount the importance of culture, but I question whether these people really are doing this or whether it's just the flavor of the month. It's the thing you're supposed to say, oh, yeah, culture. We're into culture and all this. We were hiring the right people and the right culture and everything. And I say, really? So, and here's an example of that. We had one consultant come in, and she was talking about how, of course, every company wants to build the right culture and says all this. So she walks in the organization. She's supposed to be there to help them train their personnel and get this to be more efficient machine, all those things. And she's walking around with the owner, the company, hundreds of people working for him. And as she was following him along through the office, he's spouting all this stuff. Culture, our people are our most important thing, and we really believe in culture. We put this first. And as she does, as she's walking there, she notices everybody turns away from him. Everybody runs away from him. Everybody suddenly buries their head in the computer when he walks by. Nobody's talking to him. Nobody's saying hi. Nobody's coming up and giving him ideas or information. She followed him around for a couple of days, and finally she said, "Can I tell you the truth?" He said, I hear what you're saying, but I don't see it being put into practice. I don't see people coming to you. I don't see you going to them. And he said, he kind of laughed, and he said, well, it sounds good.
Yes. Well, yeah, and the difficulty is that these companies that want to grow, and companies that could make a significant contribution, not only in their products and services, but in terms of what the ancillary benefits are in terms of additional taxes because of their profits,
right,
because of the growth that they give, the purpose that they offer to employees. All of these great things that they can do are limited because they don't have a system for how to deal with the problems that they have. And let me tell you what those problems are.
Okay.
The problems of people, I mentioned 82% of the problems we see.
People's
have to do
the
with
big
people.
One. People's the one that scares me all the time.
Right.
I'm always afraid of people problems.
Right.
There.
So people, lack of control.
Mm.
I'm afraid that I might lose control.
Oh boy, that's a big one for me because, for example, all right, we produce shows with you and others. If I put other people in charge of this, my baby, my idea, they're going to screw up. I fear, and then I'm going to get fired, or I'm going to get yelled at, or they're going to impact the quality of what we're putting out. In so many cases, I find myself saying, it's so much easier, just get out of the way, let me do it.
Well, sure, and there is a limit to what you can do.
No, isn't that the truth?
And that limit is in terms of sheer resources, in terms of the time that you can put forward, the energy that you have, and then thirdly is the expertise level.
Yeah.
Today we live in a highly complex, very sophisticated world where specialties are absolutely necessary. If I tried to produce my own radio show, which I believe I could do.
Sure, everybody can do this.
Right? Not a big deal. In fact, look at the do-it-yourself podcasters out there.
For right.
$30.95, I'll teach you how to do all of right. this. Well, yes, that's true, but it would take me time to get to the level of expertise that I require
right.
for my product. But I can delegate that to you who have because you have developed the expertise and the skills
level our niche, right.
to do this quickly.
Right.
All right, so
quickly, professionally, and hopefully better than you can do it yourself, right?
And now when people start off, they have a great idea, and they very often have to go against the grain of the culture. They have to go against the what we have always done because that's what a new idea is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so initially, they really are getting the ball rolling on their own, and it takes all of the effort that they can to get that ball moving forward. As the company grows, one of the mistakes that people make is that they start hiring inexpensive assistants.
Mm.
And when they hire those assistants, they tell them what to do.
Yeah.
And they never really let those people take responsibility, either because the founder doesn't trust them or doesn't believe they have the expertise, or maybe he didn't hire people who had that kind of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes back to that founder, the business owner, and you can see it. I've seen it so many times when I sit and watch the office of the founder, CEO,
oh, yeah.
president, every day. He's got a lineup outside. I look at his calendar.
Yep.
It's all people coming in to ask, what do we do next, coach?
Yes. I've seen that so much. Years ago when I did PR, and I worked with lots of entrepreneurial companies, and somebody once said to me, a business can't almost go to the next level until the founder departs. Because up until that point, he or she is almost guaranteed to try and keep as much control and much involvement as they can. It's hard for them to let go of anything.
Well, you can certainly say that, but there are founders who will let go.
It's hard. How do you let go?
Hard.
This is your baby. This is your livelihood. You've your whole dream, and you're going to... I remember once, years and years ago, I represented a company that at the time was very big and famous, Dayrunner. They used to, when everybody had personal organizers instead of smartphones, when you had paper organizers. And they were the largest in the world. And they started this out of a house. And it grew to be, I don't know, a $50 million company or something, and sold all over the world. And I remember talking to the founder once, and she said, you know, there are people in this building who are doing things that affect my business, my baby, and I don't even know who they are or what they're doing. That scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, right. Well, let me tell you the story about the fellow who was walking in the woods.
Okay.
He walked out and stumbled over the edge of the cliff.
Mm.
Now, it's a couple thousand feet down from the top of the cliff. So he's falling down about 1,000 feet, reaches out and grabs this vine, right? He's hanging onto this vine, 1,000 feet down, 1,000 feet up. He hangs on for an hour or two, doesn't know what to do. Now, he's not a person of faith. He's done everything in his life that he's accomplished, he's done on his own.
Right.
So he's hanging out there over 1,000 feet down, and he doesn't know what to do. So he gently looks up and says, is there anybody up there? And he hears this big voice, deep, dark voice that says, do you believe?
Yeah.
Do you trust? Are you willing to trust anything? And the fellow, you know, is kind of caught. And he says, yes, I believe. Yes, I do believe. And after a moment, he hears the deep, dark voice say, then let go of the vine.
Oh, that's hard.
And after a moment, the fellow hanging on the vine says, is there anybody else up there?
Let me talk to your boss here.
Well, but that's the entrepreneur, right?
Yes.
He gets to a place where he is actually hitting the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things coming at him,
getting in his own way, really being the brake on his own success.
Limiting it all.
Yeah.
And what the entrepreneurial operating system says to them is, this is the way. Developing your leadership team, helping them to become responsible, skillful, dedicated, and helping them to understand where you're going, how you're getting there, and why you're going there.
That was the reputation of Jack Welch and GE. I don't know if it was true or not, but he supposedly promoted from within. They had their own internal university. They developed talent. They promoted it up the ladder, some of which spun off to work for other companies, but they never gave up. They were constantly doing it. And Google, too. Google supposedly has spawned more other successful entrepreneurs than any other company has, and they're okay with that.
Well, it's letting go of the vine and trusting that people who understand what the vision is and are capable of doing it and also want to move the company forward will do that.
Yeah.
And that the biggest piece of that is not developing the people. It's helping the founder or the owner, the CEO, the president, to develop that trust.
And trust requires faith, and faith means overcoming fear. What happens when I let go?
Is there anybody else up there?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So 82% of the problems that we find across the country are people problems.
Yes.
Second is lack of control, or the fear of the lack of control.
And that's a really interesting one, because the popular culture, again, is what everybody mouths when they come in here is, we're not in a command and control environment anymore. When my dad worked for Chrysler Corporation as an executive in the 60s, nobody ever asked him, are you happy here? Can we give you a back massage? You want to play ping pong later? No. It was like, get your ass in here before everybody else and stay longer and feel lucky you got a job here. You know, it wasn't, nobody cared about how you felt. Now, that's not necessarily a good environment to work in, and we've all evolved into something better. We want our people to progress. We want them to feel good and be happy to come to work. But I wonder how many go through the motions of those little things, and at the end of the day, still want a command and control world. Shut up and just do what I say.
Oh, we would all like to have that happen, but is that really what we want? Do we really want just a mirror of what our limited vision of the world is, or do we want to have the kind of experience that responsible, capable, willing people can bring to the conversation?
Yeah.
That, to me,
you can't know it all.
Well,
you
that's
can't
where
understand.
Innovation comes from.
Right.
That's how. Take a look at what happened in Texas. Look at what's happening right now in Las Vegas. I mean, it's the response of human beings who are on the edge and have to let go and trust that are making a huge difference. I mean, this morning, just getting the reports from Las Vegas, one of the doctors there was talking about how individual people made such a huge difference because they took the initiative to apply tourniquets, to apply pressure, to get people into places where they were safe. And all of that is individual initiative. Same thing in Texas. Send us boats. They had more boats than they could possibly use.
Right.
That kind of response is possible when you allow it to be there. And that's where, you know, when we have this hitting the ceiling experience, what we teach people to do is there's five things that we should be doing in response to when hitting the ceiling. By hitting the ceiling, I mean don't know what to do next. I keep trying to make a difference. I keep trying to change this company. Nothing happens.
I add a couple of clients and I lose a couple of clients. Nothing seems to go forward.
Yes.
I seem to be stuck somewhere. I can't get to the next level.
That's right. So the first step of the five things that we teach people is simplify.
Simplify.
Okay. Make it simple. Dumb it down. It's not a complex world. It's a variegated world, but it's not complex to understand it when you dumb it down. Make it simple. Most of the problems we have are really simple. They're really simple. I mean, there's more than enough food to go around. We live in a very abundant world. The problem is one of distribution.
Right.
So,
well, that's an interesting article. That could be a whole show in itself, because we've had a number of people come through and say, are you coming at it from a position of scarcity or abundance?
Yes.
Do you think there's more business to be had? Do you think there's more money to be found? Do you think there's more good people? Or did you get the last one?
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have that notion of abundance, making it very simple to distribute food to people in need on a very local basis. Make it simple. So after simple, we teach people to delegate. And that means find people to delegate it to. Most of us experience the world in a way that's not very productive because we wind up doing things that we're very, very good at but don't want to do.
Mm. Boy, I've been there.
Right? Very good at but don't want to do. In fact, it may have been that we got a lot of adulation and a lot of attaboys or attagirls for doing things that we were good at but we really didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And so we wind up doing those things to make money, to put food on the table, to have a career, when our real productivity and the real fulfillment is doing things that we are good at, that we want to do.
Can I bring up, I just have to say this. Part of my, you're talking about me. I've done a lot of these things. I'm the poster child for what you're talking about here. And part of my problem is I've been burned so many times trusting people. Not just partners or other people who came to me with an idea, or whatever, but people who worked for me. I always said, when I had a bar for a number of years, an Irish pub that was kind of a fun project, but became a nightmare because of the people. And the people, I always said, I always wanted the person you're talking about, somebody I could delegate to and trust and rely upon, and they just get it done, and they'd develop, and I'd develop, and we'd all benefit. I never found that person. I found, instead, the other two people, the one that came in and looked like they were a great fit and found out they were flakes, they were thieves, they were something, they did everything wrong, but they presented a great image when I hired them, or the other one that was brain dead, that would just constantly say, well, now what, now what, now what? And I found myself eventually gravitating to that person because at least they didn't steal from me. At least I knew what they were going to do. I understood how to manage them. I had to tell them everything to do. But it took away all my time and effort and energy to do that.
Well, yeah, so we have two tools that we teach people to use. One is called the accountability chart, and the other is called the people analyzer. Now, I can't go into great detail right now, but essentially what the accountability chart is, do away with the task of finding a place for that person. First, sit down and write out the processes, create the processes that help you and your business get to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what it is that you, as the entrepreneur, the owner, the president, the CEO, what is it that you want to accomplish in the next 10 years, the next 30 years? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to be? What do you want to get from your business? Put together the accountability chart without any names in it, no people. Put little boxes down there that represent the seats in your organization, and then put 5 to 10, hopefully closer to 5, responsibilities that that seat has for getting the company moving forward.
And then I'm assuming you have to trust and actually give them the authority. You give them the training, you make sure they understand how to do it, and then you let them do it. And if they flop, you don't immediately swoop in and say, get out of the way, let me do it again here.
Oh, my goodness, no. What you're doing is once you have that accountability chart, then we're going to find people who have three things. Well, four things, really. Number one, we want to find people who agree with your values.
Clearly.
Right? Well, that's not easy.
No, it's not, because of my other earlier point. I don't think most of us know how to hire people. I sure don't.
Well,
everybody I hired, I was disappointed.
Well, number one, you have to know what your values are. You have to be articulate about it. You have to be able to give that to people in the hiring conversation to tell them what values your organization has.
Right.
And if they do not have those values, this is not the place for them.
But they all say they will. They'll mouth whatever they think you want to hear.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. And that's where, as a leadership team, we can begin to evaluate those people based upon the values of our company. And when somebody doesn't have those values, we have to speak with them about it.
Mm-hmm.
And through the accountability, the people analyzer, what we literally do is we teach people to be open and honest about what they are seeing. And in that leadership team meeting, we actually ask, do these people around the table in this room, do each of these people do these values? Do they do them most often? Do they never do them? Or do they do them sometimes and not sometimes? And if they're not living out the values, do they belong there?
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that sometimes you have people who are very, very good and capable, but they don't share your values.
Right.
And they'll chew away at the culture, and they'll cost more than they bring in terms of value.
But then, of course, then you have to fire them. Ooh, that's ugly and painful and hard and has all sorts of legal ramifications these days. You know, did you document it? Did you give them enough chances to fix it, et cetera, et cetera? And then I got to replace them. Oh, my God, I guess I'll just put up with them.
Well,
I don't want to fire them. I don't want to find somebody else.
Then what you're giving up on is the very thing that you sacrificed everything for. All the things that you thought you'd bring to your family, all the things that you thought you would bring to the
community,
culture,
to the world.
You're giving up on that because that becomes the task of the leadership team to develop systems so that you wind up with people who agree with your values, they live those values. Number two, they get where the company's going. They actually want to be in that seat. And finally, they are capable of doing it. Now, that doesn't mean immediately they're going to know exactly what to do, but they're going to be able to soar relatively quickly.
Well, a lot of it sounds simple, but boy, find good people, clearly give them authority and get out of the way, trust and let go. Those are all hard things to do.
Well, we've
practice.
Talked about simplifying, delegating, which is absolutely necessary. Next is predicting. Predicting, being able to predict short-term and long-term. Now, long-term means anything over 90 days. We're out there predicting what's going to happen a quarter from now, 3 months from now, and getting into that 90-day world where we're actually focusing on solving problems in the next 90 days and measuring. In fact, we are doing that, looking at where we want to be 10, 20, 30 years from now, and looking at how we're going to get there, what's the process that we're going to use. That's long-term. Short-term prediction is in the weekly meetings that are highly scripted, follow the same agenda, meet every day, same time every day, start on time, they meet at the same time and the same day every week, start on time, end on time, and follow the same agenda each week so that we actually begin to predict what's going to happen the next week.
Well, you hit two other ones that I hear people talk about. Everybody has meetings, and everybody, if they work for somebody, says 99% of those meetings are meaningless, time wasters. They make the manager feel good. They feel like they're doing something and finding something, and everybody's looking at their watch, can't wait to leave. Nobody looks forward to the meeting, or it's an inquisition. Oh, my God, they're going to grill me again on this one here. Meetings, meetings, meetings. Enough with the meetings here. Everybody wants to just get rid of all the meetings, and yet you have to have some communication back and forth. And the other one you talked about is not just meetings, but predicting. Oh, my God, we do 4 or 5 shows on sales training, and it's all about that. And it's all about trying to really come up with meaningful metrics, not just blue sky, not just what you want to hear. And then we're always disappointed, and we're always shocked, and we're always surprised, and we never meet our goals. And
that's right. And so the whole point of what we talk about, we call it the Level 10 meeting, because we want to train people and we want them to begin to learn how to have a scored on a 1 to 10, 10 high, 1 low. We want to get to the place where people actually believe and rate this meeting as a Level 10.
Wow.
That doesn't start off that way, but we're learning how to do that. When we come in, we want to start on time. In fact, we want to get there 5 minutes before, because remember what Vince Lombardi said, right?
Yeah. I forgot the exact way he put it, but
what he said was, early is on time.
Yes,
on
exactly.
Time is late.
Yes, exactly.
So we start, you know, we want people to gather 5 minutes before the meeting time every week, and then we want to spend a little time talking about what's going on in our personal lives or professional lives, so we get out of the business to look on the business.
Boy, Will, if you can do any of this stuff here, you're worth your weight in gold, because what you're talking about is the heart of everybody's problem. It's people problems. It's management and delegation and fear and all letting go and all that stuff that goes with it. It's trying to find a systematic way to run an organization and to keep the trains on time and a meaningful way to measure things that isn't just nonsense and time waster. I know all entrepreneurs aspire to do this. I certainly aspire to do it. But the times that I've been an employee, I never saw anybody do this. The meetings never started on time. They were a waste of time. People dreaded going to them. We all just told them what they wanted to hear, and we got back out to do our job here. It was none of us felt, as you said, felt that engaged with the company. We were there because we needed a job, and maybe it was better than the last job we had. And all of this is it's difficult. It all sounds so simple, but why is it so difficult to do? Is it because they just don't have a system and they're not trained how to do this, or is there some resistance to do this?
So what Gino Wickman did was, Gino Wickman started off when he was 22 as an entrepreneur and said, I want to learn how to run businesses. Mm-hmm. So he went to work with his dad, and his dad happened to have the country's largest real estate sales training company in the country. And so he thought he would come in and learn all of this from his dad. Well, when he got in the business, he found out it was a major turnaround. That his dad was a great had great vision, could be a great trainer, but didn't know how to run a business.
In that world, all they do is they're constantly churning through people, insurance, real estate, all these things. Hire a million people, they sell some stuff, they move on, get a million more in the door.
And so what Gino did was, he and a couple of partners and some very good coaches over the next 7 years got their arms around the company and turned it into a profitable company. After 7 years, they decided it was time. They sold it. Took a year or two to transition it to the new owners, who were in Virginia rather than in Detroit, where Gino and his dad lived. And so after that 2 years, Gino went to work with some other partners in starting the EO Group, Entrepreneurs Organization in Detroit. Grew it to about 90 members, and in the process fell in love with how businesses work. And so he began to pull together. Now, he didn't bring great new ideas to it. What is in the entrepreneurial operating system has been around for 100 years. It'll be around for 1,000 more. He simply pulled together all of these ways of businesses being successful and made it possible to implement this in small businesses. Now, this is businesses that have between 10 and 250 employees that are passionate, open to new possibilities, willing to learn, and are struggling right now.
Yeah.
And so what he put together was this organization that would help. By the way, the goal is 10,000 businesses running on EOS in the net by 2020.
Wow, that's a lofty goal.
Well, and it makes such a huge change, a difference. I can tell you stories about the founder, owner, partner. One partner, he was coming in to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, going home at 11 at night. He had 2 kids at home. He rarely saw them.
Yeah. That's the entrepreneur's dilemma, right?
Right. Well, after being in the EOS system, he is now coming in, still comes in at 6, goes home at 4, and is off at 5 on Friday, the whole day. And he's making as much or more money than he's got before.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, what did he do? He and his partner simplified what they were doing whenever they came to a problem. They delegated. They learned how to predict both long-term and short-term. They began to systemize the processes in their business and document all of that so that everybody would follow it. And finally, they structured it with the right people in the right place. And that began to make a huge difference for them. So it is possible for companies who are struggling with these issues to find a way to begin to excel and grow.
Let's take a break and let that sink in a bit and come back and talk more about some of the parameters. You know, can you give us any idea? Is this expensive? Is this affordable?
Absolutely.
Do I have to have special training to do it? You know, let's talk about the reality of this right after we hear from one of our sponsors.
Hi, It's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions, and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
All right, we're back with Will Crist, the Pilgrim on the 405, as he wanders through the maze that we call entrepreneurship and business these days.
So we were talking, Paul, we were talking a little bit about how businesses can begin to make the changes that we're talking about are so necessary to get beyond these issues, these people issues that plague businesses.
Yes.
The lack of control that founders and managers fear, profit, the lack of profit, never enough profit, this ceiling that companies keep hitting. And unfortunately, so many of them, when they hit that ceiling, they either flatline or even
dead, DOA.
That's right. They die.
But, you know, and I mentioned to you on the break, and I think it's worth repeating on the air here, is why wouldn't we need training and help to do this? Why do we all have the assumption that we can do this? Because now, for example, I have run my own businesses now in various shapes and forms, mostly small businesses, but I never had any training. I have ideas. I have inspiration. I have certain talents and abilities and drive and passion and whatever it is that allows me to put together a PR firm or now an internet radio station, other sorts of things. But nobody ever trained me how to manage people or hold a meeting or predict or control or systemize. Nobody ever taught me that. My father, on the other hand, was an executive for Chrysler Corporation, a VP, one of their top people. He started off as just a sales guy and worked his way up over 40 years. He did a good job. They promoted him to a better job, into a better job. Nobody ever taught him how to hold meetings or manage people or make predictions or create systems. He dealt with whatever system he was handled. He obviously found a way to keep moving up, but half the time he felt like he was a fraud, he admitted later on. Like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to figure it out and bluster my way through it. I'm not going to let anybody know. So many of it, and I've never been to business school, but I suspect they don't teach these principles in business school. They might teach the basic idea of how to break down a product into its core costs and how to, I don't even know what they teach in business, accounting and other sorts of things, but I don't think they teach you people skills.
Well, people skills and a system for running a business.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. This is about creating an operating system. If you think of a computer, you think of PC computer, and you've got an operating system that works.
Clearly.
You think of an Apple computer, you have a different operating system that works. And what happens is when you have more than one operating system, it doesn't work.
Well, it just on a very real basis, many of these companies, as they get bigger or they acquire other people, they have legacy systems, something that somebody created and it doesn't interface or work well with the other. Forget about the people. And I'll give you a great example. Again, this goes back a few years, so maybe I'm dating myself, but after my father left Chrysler, they went through some upheavals and they eventually found a way to rebound and they were hitting on all cylinders. And so they sold the company to Mercedes, another company that seems like one of the world-class ones. It was a disaster, not just because two different countries and two different cultures, because there was no – one was entrepreneurial and freewheeling, the Chrysler organization. The other one was staid and structured, and they never, ever, ever could integrate those two products and people together. They couldn't integrate the people together, and eventually Mercedes spun it off at a huge loss.
Well, and part of that issue is if we're thinking about merging companies, wouldn't it make sense to start off with taking a look at our values?
Yeah, and because, our systems.
Well, the systems are going to come out of the values. If we don't have the same values, It's going to be very difficult.
So explain that to me, because that's, again, a buzzword. And I clench my teeth when everybody says culture and values. And everybody's supposed to nod these days. Like, yeah, culture and values. And then you ask them outside the meeting, what does that really mean? I have no idea. What are the business values? That sounds like so obvious, but I think it bears explaining. Is it just simply... Because, for example, I think it's taken the place of what used to be the mission statement. When I was a PR person in the 80s and 90s, oh, my God, we'd work on the mission statement forever. We'd get it perfect, and then we put it in a drawer, and it meant nothing, but it sounded good. We put it up on the wall. Mm-hmm. I suspect that for a lot of companies, their values and their culture is a similar exercise. They spend a great deal of time. They think it means something. But in reality, it means nothing in day-to-day practice. It's a feel-good, sound-good statement.
Well, and that's why the way that we deliver our training to companies takes that into account. Lots of companies have gone out for 2 or 3 day wonderful experiences,
yeah,
creating a cultural image, creating a vision, creating a mission statement, coming back, and then it winds up on the shelf, hanging on the wall, nobody deals with it.
Or it's so nebulous it means nothing. I always laugh when I see restaurants and say, you know, good food. Oh, you're the one with good food. Oh, you know. Oh, I was looking for the bad food. You know, quick service dry cleaning. Oh, I wanted the slow service one. I mean, it's obvious.
So let me share with you the values that I have,
okay,
and that my fellow implementers of EOS systems have.
Please, yeah, because everybody says that and nobody ever questions. I feel like I'm the only one saying, does the emperor have no clothes on? Everybody says they're well-dressed and they've got values, and I say, you look naked to me.
Number one, core values, be humbly confident. Number two, grow or die.
Grow or die, well, yeah.
Number three, help first. Number four, do the right thing. And number five, do what you say.
You don't yell first?
Our values.
I thought yell first comes before help first here. What was the other one? Sorry, go through those again.
Humbly confident.
Humbly confident. So right. you're not talking about being a braggadocio. You're not talking about being swagger and that, but you're talking about at the same time.
Every EOS implementer is going to be able to take on 20 to 25 clients in a year.
Okay.
And the process takes at least 2 years. So this is not going to be a huge public figure out there. So humbly confident.
All right. What was the
number two?
One?
Grow or die.
Well, that one. And too often we are afraid to grow because, mm-hmm, one, you know, we're comfortable where we are. My father used to say that life's a parade and everybody wants to just stand still, and you can't. You either passes you by or walks over you.
Right.
So you have to grow. And too often businesses grow and all they're doing is perpetuating the problem. There was years ago, the restaurant chain, the Hard Rock Hotel, every time they opened, or Planet Hollywood rather, every time they opened a place, they lost another $5 million. Mm-hmm. But it looked good on their bottom sheet from their stock. We grew our revenue, but so did we grow our problems.
Well, how many companies out there are really not looking at growing? What they're doing, they're looking at not dying.
Yes, right.
And so
hanging on to the vine.
All of their planning has to do with mitigating death.
Right.
And the fear is, if we don't do something, we will die.
Right.
Versus, what is it that life is? Where are we going? What does it mean? What are we committed to? And that's what this is about. Be humbly confident, grow or die.
Okay.
Help first.
That is really a key one. I think that's what the internet was, social media was founded on. Offer first. Don't ask for anything in return. I'm going to give you ideas. I'm going to give you information. I'm going to give you a blog, a white paper, the video, a podcast and stuff, in the hope that I'm going to help you first, and somehow that will come back to me.
Help first. It doesn't say help first in order to. It simply says,
yes,
that's what our value is. And the next is do the right thing.
Mm.
And do the right thing means entering into danger sometimes. There are times when dysfunctional organizations need to be confronting each other about that. And that's what the implementers do.
Tell truth to power. Yeah.
Absolutely. Stepping in there. And then finally, number five is do what you say.
Well, that goes without saying. And we all learn that if you're successful in any way, shape, or form. Your word is your bond. But let's go back to the other one, the fourth one you said there, which is what?
Do the right thing.
I think you have nailed the problem with modern America. I don't want to get too philosophical here, but when my dad was a little boy, when he was coming up the corporate ladder, I'm not saying companies didn't do bad things or didn't fudge or didn't do it, but they never outright. To think that my father would have done what so many giant corporations have done, just outright lie. When Arthur Andersen went into Enron and just cooked the books openly. When Volkswagen openly said, let's put something in our catalytic converter that that tricks the systems into thinking that we've complied here. I mean, those are bold, brash decisions to just not do the right thing. And there was a generation that came up, I think it was the World War II generation, that you might fudge a little bit, but you just wouldn't do it, not because you thought you were going to get caught, because it was just not the right thing to do. You had an internal, regulator there. Now it's like, what can I get away with? Uh-huh. If I can get away with it, I'll do it. And if I get caught, okay, I get caught. That seems to be the corporate culture these days.
Right. Now, part of what we have observed is that the companies who can go out and spend 2 or 3 days putting this vision together, come back, it's hanging on the wall, sitting on the shelf, because they didn't change the operating system of their business.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we build traction. We put traction ahead of vision. We teach people how to use the tools that are going to help them achieve to get what they want from their business before we start talking about their values.
Mm.
So that means
you got to build the muscle first before you can go out and do something.
Absolutely. So that means that what we do is any company that is struggling and for whom this message resonates with them, then what we will do is I will come and give them a 90-minute meeting. And I will show them all the things that we do. We'll show them how businesses are built, and we'll show them what we can do for them.
But I'm afraid to bring you in because you're not really there to help me. You're there to sell me and close me, and you're going to hound me.
It's totally up to you, because at the end, you're the one making the decision. And I'm not there to sell you. I'm there to help you make a decision about what you do. Because at the end of 90 minutes, people do one of three things. Some people say, hey, thanks, Will. This is really interesting information. And thanks for the book, but it's not for us,
right.
Which is fine. Other people will say, Will, this has really been eye-opening, tremendous. And, we'll do this ourselves.
Yeah,
and you
thanks.
Can because we believe in help first, so the information, the tactics, and the techniques are available.
Right.
Other people will say, Will, when do we get started? Now, get started means that we schedule an all-day meeting in my session room, and what we're going to do within 30 days, and we're going to focus. On the focus day, we start focusing on the tools. We talked about hitting the ceiling. We talked about accountability chart. We talked about how we learn how to hold people accountable for what they said they would do. And the fee is always guaranteed because I have no contracts. There's at the end of the day, if I didn't provide value, you don't believe that I would give, don't pay me.
Wow. Say that again.
I said,
I thought this is big money up front, and if it doesn't work, one of those things.
No, if it doesn't work, you don't believe that I've brought you value at any time, you do not pay me. I don't give invoices. You simply bring a check. If there was value, you give me the check. If not, don't. If you want to move on after the focus day, we set within 30 days, we pick out a day to meet in my session room for 8 hours, and we work on Vision Building 1. 30 days later, Vision Building 2. And now we have all of the traction pieces in place, and we begin to meet quarterly to hold people accountable and to keep mastering all of those foundational tools that we have.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad. I thought you're going to say that I got to pay you on a month-to-month basis a big fat fee, and 6 months later find out whether I got any value out of this.
No, this is all piece by piece, and it's the same guarantee for every day forever. And in most companies, it takes about 2 years to implement this in their company, and then they graduate and do the quarterlies and the annuals on their own. Some people ask me to continue with it, but that's not my
purpose. So you're actually teaching me to walk and leave the nest myself, or you're getting
that is the expectation, because if I'm actually going to be doing what my goal is to be working with 50 companies over the next 3 years, I've got to get people out of the nest because I don't have room to handle more than 20 to 25 people in 1 year.
Wow. So how do they get a hold of you? How do they find out more?
Well, they can take a look at my site, which is www.traction-. guide.com. They can go up to eosworldwide.com/WillChrist. They can look at eosworldwide.com for themselves. They can give me a call at 949-355-6013, or they can get me at a very difficult email address, WillChrist, W-I-L-L-C-R-I-S-T, no H. Right?
Sometimes it sounds like there should be an H in there. You're that much of a savior to these businesses.
WillChrist at, and here comes the difficult part,
okay,
WillChrist.com.
Oh, wow, that's easy. WillChrist at WillChrist.com. I think I can remember that.
There you go. So if you are a business and this conversation resonates with you, call me. Talk to me. Let's see if there's a way to help you. Because I can't help everybody, but there are some people for whom this is going to make a huge difference in their experience of business, their experience of their family, their experience of their employees, and their experience in the world.
You know, I'm reminded of this of the starfish story. Have you ever heard the starfish story? Guys walking along the beach down in Mexico or someplace after a big storm, and there's all these starfish flopping around on the beach, and they're all going to die because they've been washed up onto the shore. So he starts picking them up one by one, and some local comes up and says, "What are you doing, sir?" He says, "I'm trying to put the starfish back in the water." I said, "You can't save them all." He says, "Ah, but I can save this one." Well, let's hope. All right, thanks so much.
Well, I look forward to talking with people in Orange County, and we're going to have a lot of fun over the next 3 years as the Pilgrim on the 405 continues to find ways to help businesses thrive in California.
Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willchrist.com.